This episode contains depictions of violence that some may find triggering or disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. And we're here. And we're live.
Yay.
Yay. Welcome to the, oh my gosh, the last episode for The New Witches for 2021.
That's right.
We've made it. It's a spooky episode. And this time, I don't have to ask who has what. Because I have true crime, and no matter what I am supposed to be having, that's what I'm going to read. Oh, man, how have you been?
You know, today, okay. This week's been rough, though. I think kind of eased up as it went on, but kind of what you and I talked about last time, like the stress that people put on other people and how it can kind of like come down onto you.
Yeah.
A lot of that, but improved as the week went on, I think. Yeah. I feel like I haven't had too much other than work. I'm so ready. I'm just ready for like a break from everything.
Yeah. It's been a very long year.
It has. It's been long, and yet at the same time feels like it's been very fast. Like it's all passed by. It's been a lot packed into a year.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So,
I was so sad to not see you at our company holiday adventure event thing.
I know. You know, I so wanted to go. I just assumed we couldn't, our team. Because we're often excluded from that kind of stuff. It's just,
yeah,
especially because it was the holidays. And then I finally got a message saying, hey, if you're going to go, just let me know. And I was like, we can go? Really?
Oh, man, really?
But that wasn't until after they had already, it was past the deadline. And then I felt like, well, I don't want to be the only one from our team to go because I don't want to. I don't know. There's that feeling
there
of like,
there was somebody
I don't
from
leave
customer care there.
No.
There was this gal that I was sitting next to in the Jeep thingy. We went to Safari West for those who want to know. It was really fun. Yeah, no, but when I asked her what she did, because I never met her, she's like, oh, I'm in customer care.
Oh, and then I was going to say, like, higher up, like not on phones.
Maybe. Yeah. But yeah, we had a pretty good company-wide presence that if you weren't at the event, they'll be sending it to you. Like the holiday gift.
Oh, in the email.
Did they send an email about it?
I don't know. I got a gift card.
Oh, okay, yeah. They gave it to like us, like physically at the event.
I was like, are we getting an animal? What do you mean we're getting a gift?
Everyone gets a puppy. Everyone's very overwhelmed.
An antelope.
Oh, yeah. We each got to take home one animal from the zoo. No. Oh, my gosh.
No, that was a great gift. I had to like ask my boss. I had to be like, is this legit? Because we get fish like
right.
Fishing. Things like all the
emails.
Time.
Yeah.
I'm always like, oh, got it.
Fishing?
I'm talking to Laura, Gavin.
Oh,
pea fishing.
We're recording.
We're not going fishing?
No, we're talking about like the phishing emails, like phishing, like hackers.
Different kind of phishing.
Yeah. Different kind of phishing. PH phishing. So yeah, the Visa, you can't go wrong with a Visa gift card.
Unless you're purchasing from our website.
Oh my god, that's true. Hopefully no one at work hears this.
But it's true. But yeah, they're great.
It is really, really great. They put I won't say the amount, but it was a generous amount. I didn't know they were going to put that much, yeah. Which is great. We know what we'll be using it on. We're getting a cat.
Aww. Yeah. You have, like, a cat picked out, or just, like...
So Gavin and I applied to a rescue that's local around here. They even did, like, a background check. Not a background check, like, reference check. They called our references and made sure we were, like, legit. They even asked for my boss's number to, like, I guess verify that I had an income to pay for an animal, which is, like, very fair, but then they never ended up reaching out to him, actually. But anyways, we got approved. Our application got approved. The references went through and everything. So then we just had it earlier today. We had, like, a Zoom meeting with one of the volunteers, one of the foster moms, and she, we already had told her we had talked to her over the phone. This is the Purebreds Plus Cat Rescue that I've linked in past notes. So yeah, I spoke with Dana. She's wonderful, wonderful volunteer there. And wait, she takes care of many blood? Purebreds.
Apparently I have Harry Potter on the mind.
It's a pure blood. I mean, they do have some half bloods, but for the most part, they're pure. No, they specialize in purebreds, but they do have some, like, mixes, though. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not like they'll only take purebreds. Like, that's just, like, kind of how they started and what they specialize in. Mm-hmm. But anyways, we already told Dana what we were looking for, so she's kind of like our cat matchmaker. And in the Zoom meeting, she basically introduced us to a bunch of cats that she thought would be good fits for us. And we zeroed in on, like, 4 cats where we asked, like, oh, like, you know, can we watch how they play? Or it was really, really smart how they're doing a Zoom meeting first for us, because she was explaining, like, especially with COVID, people coming in with their masks, like, the cats get uneasy. And this way we can see how they are in their more, like, natural, like, chilled, relaxed state. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to be going over to Sacramento. In January to do an in-person and really try to zero in on one cat. And if all goes well, we will leave that day with the cat.
Yay!
So we'll be using our Visa gift card to get the pet supplies.
Yay!
Yes!
That's exciting.
Yeah, we're really excited. Really, really excited. A kitty cat. Yep. So many amazing new things going on. Yeah. It's a little overwhelming. But we're both, like, game. We're just, you know, we're gonna do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's exciting.
It is. Yeah. So that's happening. We have our walkthrough for the house coming up, which is exciting.
Yeah, because it's yours soon.
It is. It's so, pretty soon. So a few days before we officially close, we will be doing, like, the walkthrough where they show us kind of just the different components of the house, walk through, like, different, like, warranties that we have and whatnot, a list of the suppliers and contractors that we can reach out to if there's, you know, anything that comes up, which is good. And it'll be the first time that we'll see the house completed. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gavin has seen it more recently than I have. So for me, it'll be even more of a shock because when I saw it last, there were no countertops, no flooring. Like, they had just started putting cabinets in. Mm-hmm. And I think it's pretty close to being complete, actually, now. We were
good.
Yeah. Yeah. So very exciting.
Yay.
Yeah. I feel like I'm really braggy, but there's just so many exciting new things happening in my life. And I love to share it with you all.
It's exactly, it's valid. You have really big, exciting things happening.
Yeah. Yeah. They're
worth talking about.
We're so stoked. Yeah, honestly, like, it was just fun to sit down together and kind of just like be like, oh, can we check this cat out, or like talk to us about this cat, and we're like, which one's the lap cat? That's the one we want. And I was actually even surprised with how like gung-ho Gavin was about like scheduling the in-person. And he was so cute. He was even like, be careful, we might leave that day with like six cats. And he's like, I'm not sure if I'm gonna be able to sleep until then. We're so excited. Because I know like Gavin is such a dog person, and I know he's very, very excited to get a dog someday. But we've agreed that that's a little much. We'll take that on after the wedding. So yeah. So anyways, we're both really excited to be cat parents, and for me to finally have my familiar. I'll finally have
watch one. It's gonna be more attached to Gavin.
Shut up, don't put that in the universe. I'll be so sad. It better not be.
That's how I was with Domino. I was like, oh my god, we're gonna get a dog and she's gonna be like my little baby, and she is now, but at first, nope. All Graham. She's obsessed.
Well, this cat's going to have, like, mostly me day to day.
Right.
Is the edge. I have that edge where Gavin goes into work every day, whereas I work from home. So I think I'm going to have the edge over him for that. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Any other updates? I think we have some new Patreon members to shout out, correct?
Yes.
We have at least one or two new ones.
We have two. We first have, I believe it's Elisa, E-L-L-I-S-A, Elisa K, and Samantha.
Thank you so much, you two.
We appreciate you.
And welcome to our community. Yes. Don't forget to send us your secret passcode to be let into our close friends list on Instagram and our private Facebook group for Patreon members only. And we hope you enjoy all of the other great benefits that we give our Patreon members. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Should we just get into it?
Yeah, let's get good and creepy.
Okay. So I have true crime. We always start there and then we round off with paranormal. And during this time of year, I always love to try to find something holiday themed or something that took place around the holidays. And I was able to find one. And it's also an overseas one. We were very local, our last spooky. Now we're taking a hop across the pond.
Oh, and mine's a leap too.
Really?
Yeah.
Perfect. So we went from local to international. So this is the Christmas Eve murder of Samina Imam.
Oh.
And this is one that I've actually never heard any true crime podcast cover. I'm sure like somebody has, but of all the ones that I've listened to, I've never listened to this one covered. So this was fun, not to like read about, but to kind of like, you know, I just kind of ran across this like Googling like Christmas true crime. I wasn't even like, didn't have to be murder. Like I'm like, I was down with like a heist or whatever. Right. And I did come across this one, and I want to tell Samina's story because she was just like such a beautiful, bright young woman. So this stuff does take place in the UK. She, and this also takes place in 2014. So, recent enough, but, you know, a few years back.
Yeah.
So, Samina was a 34-year-old woman living in Cardiff, Wales, in the UK. She was known to be, like, super-duper kind. Like, that person that's super approachable. She was that friend or that family member that was, like, always everyone's trusted confidant. Like, people's rock. Like, they went to her for advice. Like, I think of, like, almost like my mom. She's, like, the rock of the family, and everyone goes to her for advice. She was also called, like, referred to as a healer by her family. She was always very, like, steadfast and comforting during really difficult times. Like, this is the girl you lean on when times are rough. Samina was also very short, standing at 5'2", my height. and with her endearing nature led to her boyfriend calling her Sai, which was S-A-I, and that acronym stood for sweet and innocent. Aww. So I was just kind of like, she was really bubbly. That was just like the demeanor that she had. And she was just like a cute little thing. Mm-hmm. Just kind of describe who Samina was as a person. Now, her career, she actually worked for Costco as a regional marketing manager, and she oversaw stores in Southampton, Bristol, and Coventry.
Wait, Costco?
Yeah. Apparently they have Costco's in the UK. I did not know either.
I love that.
Right? All right. I mean, hey, UK people like to bulk shop too. Why not? So, as I said, this true crime case does take place around Christmas time. And so for Boxing Day, which is for the day after Christmas, it's kind of like the UK as well as Canada, they treat it as like their version of Black Friday. Like there's like a lot of sales then. And it's kind of like another extra holiday day for families to get together, like go shopping or just, you know, an extra day for presents too. So Samina was planning to go visit her family in Essex on Boxing Day on the 26th, which is actually all the way across the UK island to the East Coast. So Cardiff is to the west, Essex is to the east, and it was about like a 3.5-4 hour drive. However, once December 26th came around, Samina never made it, and her family immediately called the police. Like, Samina was so dependable. When she said she was going to be there, she would be there. And if, like, something came up, she would have communicated that. She talked to her family all the time. So the fact that they didn't hear anything from her leading up to it and she just didn't show up, they knew right away something was wrong. So once the missing person investigation started, they found that the last time anyone had seen her was on Christmas Eve during her shift at the Coventry Costco at around 4 p.m. when she left. Like, that was the end of her shift. She was then found on CCTV at a nearby store called Mark and Spencer, or M&S, which appears to me like kind of like a chain convenience store, similar to like a 7-Eleven. Maybe like not as trashy because, again, England, but who knows? So in the CCTV footage, she is seen at the register and she's buying a bottle of Bellini and a tub of candy, and then she leaves the store. Then police found that a hotel room was booked under her name at the Malmaison Hotel in Birmingham. So on that night of Christmas Eve, the family actually said that Samina had talked to her sister on the phone. So that's the last time she spoke with family, was on Christmas Eve. She asked how her mom was doing, and she also confirmed that she would be at their parents' home on Boxing Day for family Christmas celebrations. However, unbeknownst to Samina's sister, Samina was not alone in the car when she had made this phone call. So what's surprising to me, and I think to a lot of people, so Samina and mom, as I'm sure you can like gather from the name, she was a woman of color. And it was rather surprising, but like the police they took this missing person case extremely seriously, immediately launched their search, and they even had a code name for the case. It was Operation Ceramic. They just right away, they like, I think, you know, they saw that there was nothing in Samina's life to hint that she might have run away or that she, you know, blew off her family. Like, it was just so clear that this was very out of character and something must have happened, especially with the fact that she never checked into that hotel either.
Why ceramic?
I have no idea, actually. Okay. I was trying to find out why they chose that, and I couldn't find any articles that explained that, but that was the name. It was Operation Ceramic.
right.
So many detectives were put on the case, and they alerted several media outlets of Samina's disappearance. Like, so many people in the area were aware, and they were on the lookout. Like, it was just, like, the community, the region, like, really came together, and they right away, like, knew about this missing woman, and, like, suddenly everyone was concerned, not just her family and friends, but everyone who knew of Samina's disappearance. Mm-hmm. Now, unfortunately, 11 days pass, and she still hadn't been found. On the 4th of January, 2015, now, so we've passed the new year, Samina's BMW was found on a quiet residential street in Lutton, which is about 65 miles from Coventry, where her last Costco shift was. And it was, it's about an hour and a half drive from the hotel room she had booked in Birmingham. So it didn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, right. It was just so out of the way for both those locations. They didn't really understand why, how it ended up there or why. When they investigated the scene, her handbag was missing, as well as her suitcases and her shopping, too. They didn't find any of the Bellini bottle or the candy or anything. None of her items were in there. They also noticed that there were no fingerprints, which is obviously very suspicious, because there what car that's just left... Exactly. Yeah. It would have some. This car was completely wiped. And the driver's seat was pushed far too far back for someone of Samina's height. Mm-hmm. So remember, she's 5'2".
Right.
And as someone who is 5'2", we're cranking that. Like, this, we're all the way up on the seat height, and we're really close to the steering wheel. Basically, it was such a difference that only a very tall person could have driven the car with the seat like that, is what they determined.
So interesting that they chose, like, all right, I'm going to wipe all the fingerprints, but fuck it. They can know my height. That's fine.
Like, you're so close, man. I mean, I'm glad you were dumb.
Right.
That you missed that, but. So the missing persons inquiry became a no body murder inquiry. So they knew, they're like, uh-oh, this is not good.
Yeah.
So from then, it didn't take long for detectives to put the pieces together. Data from Samina's phone, obviously they didn't have her phone, but, like, they, you know, tapped into, like, her network, right? Mm-hmm. It revealed to police that Samina had sent one last message to a 41-year-old man named Roger Cooper, who was the manager of the Costco in Coventry where Samina had her last shift before she disappeared. And it was confirmed that Roger had worked that same shift with her as well. And the text message was, quote, "I am fuming. I'm going to where I am truly cared for," unquote. So it sounded angry. They're like, all right, like, what's up with this Roger dude? So they decide to immediately bring Roger in for questioning, of course. Mm-hmm. His alibi, though, was that on Christmas Eve night, he left work to go to his brother's home in Leicester. Mm-hmm. So his brother David's home was actually closer to where the hotel was that Samina had booked a room, and closer to where her car was found. So they're like, well, still suspicious.
Yeah.
But Roger showed them a text message he had sent to Samina the following day, Christmas Day, wishing her a happy Christmas. And he's like, why would I send that if, like, I thought something had happened to her? Or if I knew something had happened to her?
To cover his tracks.
Yeah. Okay, like, investigators aren't buying it. Like, you could have sent that for exactly that reason.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, yeah. Now, one thing to note about Roger is that he was 6'5".
Oh, he's a big guy.
Mm-hmm. He also cried in the interrogation room, expressing his worry for Samina when he knew where she was the entire time. Police were able to get more information out of Samina's phone network, placing her movements not to the hotel she booked, nor to where her car was found. On Christmas Eve night after her shift, Samina made her way to Leicester, to Roger's brother, David's home. CCTV also found both brothers in Samina's car, driving it to the quiet street where it would eventually be found. And with this information, police showed up to David's home with a warrant. Unfortunately, there was no sign of Samina Imam. But after hours of digging through David Cooper's home, he was a hoarder, so they had a lot to dig through. Yeah, it took him a while. Like, a while.
Mm-hmm.
They eventually found the exact same bottle of Bellini and tub of sweets that Samina had purchased at the M&S store. And, I mean, I guess, yeah, we were totally still using, like, those separate sat-navs in 2014. Mm-hmm. Like, not everyone had built-in navigation in their cars or even maybe on their phones, right?
Especially depending on the year.
Depending on the year, right? And so they had her, like, her sat-nav that she used in her car was found in her in his home. Now, David Cooper, Roger's brother, stood at 6'7", also very tall.
I briefly dated someone that height.
Ginormous. Like, huge. Like, Gavin's exactly 6 foot, and I feel so itty-bitty. Like, add another half foot to that? Holy crap. So they took David into the police station for questioning, like, right away, as you can imagine. Now, he claimed that he had never heard of Samina before, and he denied that Samina and Roger were having a romantic relationship because Roger was in a long-term relationship himself with his girlfriend, Suzanne Potts. But what both Roger and David omitted in their initial interrogations was that 2 years ago, Roger had started an affair with a coworker at Costco who was none other than Samina Imam.
Samina.
Scandal. So, yeah. Relationships between senior members of staff at Costco were very much against the rules. But this didn't obviously stop Roger and Samina. Roger had promised that he would break things off with Suzanne so that they could be together. But he did it, like, so many times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he had her going for, like, 2 years just yanking her chain. So it's 2 years later with no end in sight. Samina begins to get restless. As, like, any woman who is in love with a guy and won't break things off. So with Roger having a long-term partner at home, Samina was stuck playing second fiddle. But that Christmas, Samina thought everything was set to change. She had actually... Go ahead.
She also had an affair?
Samina?
Yeah.
She was having an affair with... Like, she was the other woman. Like, she wasn't in a long-term relationship. Her serious relationship was with Roger.
Because you mentioned the nickname that she had was given to her by her boyfriend.
Which was Roger.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, like, omitted the name of the boyfriend for, like, dramatic effect. So she's thinking that things will turn around at this point because she gave Roger an ultimatum in the run-up to the holiday season. Basically, she's like, leave your girlfriend or it's over. And Roger was like, oh my gosh, okay, yeah, I can't lose you. He agreed. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to start our life together. So by the time that Christmas Eve of 2014 finally came around, Samina was feeling elated and excited. People remember her just kind of being in such a great mood and so joyful. And she just kept talking about how excited she was for the year to come. Of course, she couldn't say anything of, like, why, because she was having this, you know, this relationship with somebody who was basically below her. Like, mm-hmm. Samina was his boss, Roger's boss. Right. So, like, very no-no in that company. And in a lot of companies for good reason. So she was busy preparing for the festive days that were to follow. And as I said, she popped out of the store to grab a bottle of Bellini, the tub of sweets. Her plan was coming together. And, you know, what's funny is that when investigators, like, backed up and rewatched the CCTV footage of her at that convenience store, they actually found that Roger was there with Samina. They saw him in the background exiting the store just a couple of minutes before she did. So the pair planned to spend Christmas Day at the Malmaison Hotel in Birmingham. And as far as Samina knew, by the start of 2015, they would finally be officially together. Mm-hmm. All Samina wanted for Christmas was the man that she loved. And this year she was finally going to get him, like, in her mind. At least that's what she was promised. However, while Samina had been getting everything ready to start her new life with Roger, him and his brother David had been preparing to take her life. So, Roger obviously never had any intention of leaving his partner.
Yeah.
He feared with this ultimatum, he's like, oh my gosh, she's getting restless, she's getting impatient. She's not, like, buying into my lies. He feared that Samina would spill the beans on their affair. She never threatened that. Mm-hmm. She just threatened that she would just end the relationship. But at this point, I mean, when you have, like, someone manipulative, clearly toxic, and, like, emotionally abusive, I'm sure. Because mm-hmm. who has the mind to that this is your reaction is to plot to kill your lover over them mm-hmm. just asking, like, commit to me or we're over.
Yeah.
For her to, like, disregard her life. I mean, come on. So he's scared that she's going to spill the beans on the affair, which, of course, would jeopardize his relationship with Suzanne and his career at Costco. Like, he knew he would have been fired. Mm-hmm. They probably would both have been fired, but obviously he was thinking more of himself. So rather than face the consequences of his actions, Roger enlisted the help of David. And together, they set out about planning to kill Samina in cold blood. So at 4 p.m. on Christmas Eve, at the end of Samina's shift, Samina had actually left work just after Roger, and they each drove off in their separate cars. That's where when they met up nearby at the M&S store, where she unpacked her luggage from her BMW, and then willingly jumped into Roger's Audi. So she's thinking that they'll just drive together to the hotel. So leaving her car parked up on a quiet street, Roger and Samina drove off together towards Leicestershire, where David's house is. Detectives believe Samina thought this was to be like a quick pre-Christmas visit to David, just a detour on their way to Birmingham. And it was on this journey that Samina spoke with her sister on the phone for the last time. So the couple arrived at David Cooper's home at 5 p.m. According to David's false account, he said that he opened the door, assuming that it was his brother, but was to his surprise Samina, and let her in knowing she was a coworker of her brother's. In his statements, David tried to make it seem like Samina was a delusional, like, person who was obsessed with Roger. Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, I let her into my home because I'm a nice person, and I knew that David was coming to be able to, like, handle the situation, so I was trying to stall her. I offered her a cup of tea and tried to assure her that, like, Roger was due any minute to, like, figure all this out. And that while he was preparing the tea, she was very talkative, saying how they made plans to see each other. And to David's knowledge, that she must be crazy because Roger is with Suzanne. Mm-hmm. According to David, she got very loud and abrasive. And that in a desperate attempt to quiet her, because his walls were paper thin, David claimed that he happened to have some chloroform on him. And used a tea towel to soak it and put it over Samina's mouth and nose.
As you do.
As you do when you're trying to calm someone down.
Jeez.
David continued on to say he thought of it on the spot because he had seen it in movies. And he had no intention whatsoever of harming her. Just quieting her until Roger got to his home to help with this hysterical woman.
What movie has used that as a means of calming or quieting someone than just
right?
What movie?
Like, I'm, it's no, just no. You know what they use. You know how they use it in movies.
It is always for kidnapping and or
exactly.
murder. Always.
Exactly.
Maybe rape.
I mean, but all like but not nefarious, not yeah, all nefarious, not just like I just wanted her to chill. So he actually did admit to killing her, but only accidentally. And that after he had realized what he had done, he didn't know what to do. David said that at this point, his only priority was self-preservation. So he called a friend named Ben, who has never been verified to even exist, to come over and help him get rid of the body. And according to David, once Ben came over, he took Samina's dead body from the home and he never saw her again with no knowledge as to how or when or where Ben was going to dispose of the body.
Wait, did he ever explain, like, why he had chloroform?
Oh, okay, so sorry. I meant to write this in my notes, but I didn't. So David was an ex-soldier, and he said that he had chloroform on hand because, like, of his ex-military status. Like, he had it in an ammo tin or something like that.
Is that
ammo
standard?
Box. I just really don't know. I'm like, why would soldiers have chloroform on them?
Yeah.
But he was all, like, you know, kind of being like, well, I'm a vet. And, yeah. You know, I have military experience and we have access to things that the normal population doesn't. I'm also a hoarder, so I knew I happened to have this stuff. And that was the only thing I could think of to quiet her.
Did he kill another woman?
Maybe,
is there,
maybe
like, a dead prostitute somewhere?
Listen, this guy. I'm so glad that they're not bright.
Yeah.
I'm so glad that they're not very bright.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, during this whole statement that David is giving, he was very adamant that Roger was not in a relationship with Samina and that he's like, well, maybe they had previous sexual relations and that Samina maybe couldn't take a hint that he wasn't interested romantically in her. And that's when a tip came in from a witness who said that they saw David Cooper at his allotment on Groby Road in Leicester on Christmas Eve night. So I guess in the UK, you're given an allotment, which is like a little piece of land that you can garden at. And it's not necessarily attached to where you live. It's just kind of like it's assigned to you. So it was away from his home, but it was under his name. Like that was his allotment. And so that they said that they saw him there on Christmas Eve night, contrary to David's statement that he had stayed in his home after his friend took Samina's body away the rest of the night. So they dispatched archaeologists to the allotment right away and they began their excavations. They combed through, this was like not huge, but it was large, that it took them 4 days that they were being very careful in how they processed this property. Because not only are they obviously desperate to find possibly Samina's body, but to preserve any evidence.
Right.
And on day 4 was when they finally found the outside edge of a sleeping bag. They lifted a flap and knew straight away Samina Imam's body had been found. Her family were alerted and they were, as you can imagine, just absolutely devastated. The body was taken to Royal Infirmary for autopsy and they found that Samina had a green plastic bag over her face as well as a scarf around her neck. Her body had been fully wrapped in cling wrap and towels and she had been placed in her shallow grave within hours of her death. So pretty consistent with, you know, seeing David Cooper burying something late Christmas night. And what's more, one of the evidence pieces that they were able to recover at the allotment was Samina's business card, which was partially burnt at the scene.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know if they like were trying to get rid of it so that if they did find the body, they couldn't even identify her, but.
By her business card. Because that's
by her business card.
Most bodies are identified.
Yeah. And her cause of death was determined to be from the chloroform.
Oh.
There was also a bizarre combination of metallic elements, including antimony, cadmium, tin, mercury, and arsenic in her system. And it's thought that this was also administered to her in liquid form.
Like tea?
Maybe tea. I don't know. They got it into her somehow, whether that was like an injection or they had her drink it or I don't know. So the brothers were arrested on suspicion of murder, pretty strong suspicion, on the 7th of January 2015 and were charged 2 days later. At this point, investigators believe Roger had a hand in her death, unlike what David is claiming, that he knew nothing and that, you know, they weren't in a romantic relationship and this is not Roger's fault at all. He was just being like an overly protective brother and it went wrong on him. So it's speculated that Roger lured Samina to David's house as just a detour to meet his brother before heading to their romantic getaway at the hotel in Birmingham. And of course, this would have seemed like a big deal and a huge show of his commitment from Samina's point of view. And she was probably like more than willing to take this detour. Like she has been dying for this man to finally commit to her. And the fact that he's like, you know what, let's spend Christmas together. And hey, like, come meet my brother. Like, who wouldn't be down for that? So it's believed by investigators that Samina was attacked by David almost immediately upon entering his property. And honestly, it can't have been difficult for the brothers to overpower her. Like, they're 6'5 and 6'7. These men towered over a 5'2 unprepared Samina. So as I said, she was smothered with the chloroform to the point of death, which was actually, the chloroform was actually purchased on eBay a few weeks beforehand on David's computer. It wasn't just something he had lying around.
Yeah.
Like he said, he's like, oh, that thing's been there forever. No, he, or at least someone using David's computer purchased that chloroform.
Right.
So by 6:25 p.m., on Christmas Eve, Roger had already begun his journey back to Coventry, leaving David to dispose of Samina's body. And they note this from, at least like his whereabouts from, phone records. Mm-hmm. In an effort to create the impression Samina was still alive, Roger, once he'd turned up at his home to join his partner, Suzanne, sent a text to himself from her phone. And that was that angry text saying, I am fuming. I'm going to where I am truly cared for. So he sent that to himself from Samina's phone to make it seem like, you know, she ran off somewhere to start a new life because she was frustrated or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, David got on with disposing of Samina's body. Over the following few days, the brothers continued to cover up operation. Samina's car was moved from Coventry to the Leicester street, and then, after being wiped for fingerprints and DNA, abandoned in Lutton. During a 10-week trial, prosecution counsel Timothy Spencer told the court that Roger had brazenly lied to Samina about starting a new life together and that he never had any intentions of leaving his girlfriend Suzanne for her. So while Roger clearly had a motive for the murder, however, like, twisted and fucked up, it still kind of remained a mystery why David was so down to kill a woman he barely knew.
Yeah.
Because, like, Samina had never met David before. Maybe he was being, like, overly protective, and he's like, how dare this woman, you know, do this ultimatum on... But anyways, then there was this discovery... Again, like, David's house was a hoarder situation, so they continued to comb through that house. They discovered a burner phone in David's home. And it was revealed that this wasn't their first attempt at taking Samina's life. Oh, it was just the first time they had succeeded. Their first attempt on her life was planned for the early hours of the 12th of December, 2014. Samina was a regular guest at Solihull's Premier Inn. Again, so she was a regional manager. She went between, you know, a few different Costco locations. Mm-hmm. And when she was in the Coventry area, she would always stay at this hotel. And there was a Christmas party. She was planning on drinking. So she's like, you know, I'm not going to be driving all the way back to Cardiff in the late hours. So she, on the 12th, she was planning on staying at the Solihull's Premier Inn. Roger had told Samina to meet him at the hotel where he claimed he had booked a room and had a surprise for her. The surprise, it turned out, was that no room had been booked and Roger wasn't going to be there. Meanwhile, his brother David sat in a rental car in the parking lot of the hotel, ready and waiting to abduct Samina. The brothers communicated using Star Wars codes. Things like Death Star complete, stay on target, and you are expected, Vader, were said back and forth to each other.
These are like children.
Yeah. This is the part that kind of like feels fucked up, because it seems to me like they were having a little too much fun with this plan. Like, it wasn't like a, we have to get this done. It seemed like they really enjoyed the process of planning a killer. Like, it was a game.
Yeah.
The plan failed, however, because Samina's taxi dropped her off at the front entrance where the abduction could easily be witnessed by others. So they had to kind of abort. So luckily that night, Samina made her way safely into the hotel from her taxi. David had actually sent a text to his brother in broken French, which translated to, "There's no point, no score. The window is closed." Basically saying like, yeah, no, we weren't able to take her down.
Yeah.
And so just 12 days after that, the brothers took aim once again, and this time, obviously, they succeeded. At the trial at Crown Court, Judge Thomas said, quote, "The use of a poison in a case such as this demonstrates a cold-blooded intention to kill regardless of the consequences. You were together, hand in glove, in planning and carrying out the murder of a joyful, bubbly young woman brutally betrayed by a man she loved and his brother," unquote. At this point, David and Roger were both still pleading not guilty. And on the 21st of October, 2015, though, Roger and David were both found guilty, because duh, of murder.
Right.
Unanimously by a jury. By Christmas of 2015, so a year later, they were both behind bars, each serving a 30-year sentence. Detective March said, quote, "Most murders that occur are spontaneous events driven by anger or jealousy, whereas in this case, what we uncovered was weeks and weeks of planning to kill Samina, numerous attempts on her life, and a really unusual cause of death," unquote. So it's still very unclear as to David's true involvement, why he was so involved in helping his brother kill his lover, and also if somehow Roger manipulated him to fall on his sword for him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually, there's no way to prove this, but it's pretty well believed by investigators that were working this case, that Roger was actually working in a way not only to kill Samina, but set up his brother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his brother's obviously part of trying to kill Samina, but also in a way where he could get away with it as much as possible. They think that he was actually the one that used David's computer to buy the chloroform.
It kind of sounds like David maybe just really was not the brightest, and maybe had some sort of mental illness, especially if he was a hoarder, and his brother absolutely took advantage of that. Say he's innocent because of those things, but
oh no, he absolutely is not. I'm gonna say that Roger, though, was, I think, like, the true mastermind. And you know, sometimes there's the folie à deux, where there's like one dominant person that kind of instills like this, they weren't delusional, but like, you often have a case of somebody who convinces another person to do such malicious things as them. Or sometimes it's, you know, obviously mental illness kind of thing where they are both in a delusion together or a psychosis together. But it's believed that David was very, very influenced by Roger, and that Roger was like a smooth operator. And it was actually revealed later that Samina wasn't even his only lover. He had another one that was also a Costco employee. And that who he actually impregnated.
Did she know about Samina?
No.
But she not until the arrest and everything.
Huh?
I guess she didn't give him an ultimatum.
No. No.
That was it for him, I guess.
Yeah. Poor Samina. And poor Suzanne.
Yeah.
Who is the long-term girlfriend. Roger's basically the moral of the story is that Roger's absolute trash and scum of the earth.
Yes.
Yeah. But yes, that is the Christmas Eve murder of Samina Imam.
Poor Samina.
I know. Yeah, so she just seemed like such a optimistic person, just like always just giving love, and was probably far too naive.
Yeah. Well, and I think
it's not her fault at all. No, it's not her fault at all. Like, so many people fall into this kind of trap with people who lead them to believe that they'll leave their partner for them, and then they keep stringing them along for, like, ever. Emotions I'm glad that she finally... Do... Mm-hmm, go ahead.
Emotions do funny things to people.
Yes.
It makes you oversee red flag. I mean, if you're ever with somebody who is with somebody else, number one, you just shouldn't be with them. But once emotions come into play, you do kind of allow for things that you otherwise wouldn't had those emotions not been present.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
It's not black and white.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, yeah, now let's do the fun part now. Tell us the paranormal.
Well, let's go from international to interdimensional.
Hell yeah.
I've been waiting to say that. I'm like trying to get comfy here because I'm in a new space and I want to, you know, okay. So I wasn't sure what I wanted to cover. I was like, what is paranormal and Christmas themed?
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't think of anything we haven't covered already. Exactly. And that isn't like a true crime that then turns into a paranormal. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't want to delve too into that. So anyway, I came across something just wildly different. And it actually started with a TikTok video that I was watching that led me down a rabbit hole of like, this is an interesting concept. Obviously, none of it was real, but I appreciated the concept and I shared it with Graham, who was like, that reminds me of this thread I saw on Reddit that he said he had to stop following it because it was messing with him, but it just made him feel uneasy.
Okay.
And it got me thinking. You know, we talk about the Mandela effect every now and then.
Yes.
As well as interdimensional beings that have maybe been lightly touched on. So I wanted to look up stories of people who claim to have traveled interdimensionally.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's honestly, I can't remember the name of the page. If I can find it, I'll share it for anyone who like might care. But they have it set up to make it look like they woke up in an alternate universe where they're the only person.
Whoa.
Wait, and they have videos of them, like, not their face, but, like, in, I think they were from Italy. So, like, they've been to the Vatican. They ended up on a ghost ship, which took them to New York. And it's wild they have these videos of them in, like, downtown New York with no people. Areas where people are, like...
They're saying, they're claiming that they've been taking these videos when they were in this alternate dimension.
Like they're there right now. And somehow they're able to message us here.
That's some source code shit.
It's, well, yeah, and
did you ever see that with Jake Gyllenhaal?
No. I don't think so.
So source code was that, like, he was on life support, and he's actually, like, it's so hard to explain, because it was, like, so, not cerebral, but just, like, very, like, kind of interdimensional kind of-ish, where, there's this tragedy, like this, I think it was like a train explosion,
mm-hmm.
and they have, and the government has this really schmancy technology where you can place somebody, like their consciousness, in that situation, and they're basically trying to find like who did it, and they send this guy who's like an ex-military guy to find it. The reason why they do it is because he's like on life support, so they're just like, they uploaded his consciousness into that situation, and they're like, we need you to investigate and see who was the cause of this. Like, how did this happen? And all this time, he's somehow able to communicate with the people who are, like, awake and outside of this source code, we'll say it.
Mm-hmm.
And he starts saying, like, he starts talking about it conceptually, where he kind of starts falling in love with one of these women on the train. And he's like, well, what happens if I can stop it? And then he stops the bomb from happening, the explosion from happening. And then he gets to, like, live his life with this girl. And he's like, I'm going to order you guys a pizza. And let's see if you receive it on your end. So he's continuing to live in this consciousness, in this, like, situation that they, false situation they've created. And he, like, he orders a pizza, and the people, like, receive the pizza at the end, and that's like the twist of like, wait, what?
That actually sounds really vaguely familiar. Like, maybe I watched it once when it first came out.
It was years ago.
Because I feel it sounds vaguely familiar. I remember,
and I'm so sorry for anyone who has wanted to see it, and I've now like ruined it for you. But come on, it's been out for years.
Yeah.
And also, it's not like the best movie ever. It's a fun movie to watch, but
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, that's kind of perfect for this, because, yeah, I don't know. I got a bit of a science boner doing this. Ew. Because I don't know. I just wanted to know more about, like, obviously there's a lot of stories you might hear, especially if it's mm-hmm. on TikTok, where you're like, okay, this is obviously fake, but it's such a fun idea. Is it possible? Do we know if it's possible? Is someone studying this?
Yeah.
And there is a lot of talk in the science world of parallel universes. They're also called meta universes or multiverses.
Ooh, the multiverse.
They're basically a group of theoretical twin universes that coexist at the same time as our own, pretty much. They're said to be, like, simple variations of our reality, all running at the same time in different realities. They're not uniquely codified to the science fiction realm, because mm-hmm. people actually are researching these.
Holy
not
shit.
In the science world, it's based philosophy. Philosophers are studying it. Physics, obviously. And even theology. They all have theories about why multiverses exist. And how they would work if they did.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, parallel universes have been used in, like, movies, TV shows, as an explanation, basically, for, like, phenomena, or even just, you know, Marvel has their big multiverse, which is, like, now becoming a thing. But it's,
yeah,
it's been talked about, obviously, for a really long time in sci-fi. And then, of course, there's quantum mechanics, which is the science that looks for explanations to phenomena that cannot be explained by the natural laws of physics and science. And they've been studying parallel universes since 1956.
Holy crap. That's so much longer than I would have thought.
Yeah. It's been a thinker for a while.
Hmm.
American physicist Hugh Everett first formulated the idea of their existence to explain the theory that every possible outcome of every choice we have actually does happen.
Oh, wow. So, like, every single moment, it splits into infinity.
Every choice. Every choice that comes up. So while in this universe you may have chosen path A, an alternative universe, you will have chosen path B.
Okay.
Et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. So where and how parallel universes exist is actually the most heated source of debate in science. Some say meta-universes exist close to us. So close, in fact, that ghosts may be nothing more than people from alternate universes somehow slipping into our reality.
What?
Mm-hmm. While others postulate that these universes are infinitely far, way beyond the farthest galaxies. So, like, there's no crossover.
Okay.
A third theory is that parallel universes exist in different dimensions, either lower or higher than our than the fourth dimension world that we live in, basically. And while the idea of parallel universes may seem incredible, more and more scientists are buying into the idea of a multitude of universes coexisting barely millimeters away.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. A disturbing new theory currently being researched, actively being researched in several high-profile universities, holds that the Big Bang may not have been the actual beginning of the universe.
Oh my god, we're getting really existential now, okay?
Feel it, feel it. They actually, some scientists are claiming that the big explosion that we see as the origin of our life could actually be the result of two universes colliding, thus generating a new one.
What the fuck?
My own personal theory, I am not a scientist, has always been, not always, but like for a long while now, is that the Big Bang was just the end of an old universe. And that is ends.
I've thought of that too.
And that's, yeah, it's all happening at the same time too.
That makes sense that it was like the end and a beginning of a universe, because there's that whole thing where we're, because of the Big Bang, like the momentum of it, it expands and at some point it stops and then it starts retracting. Like, is it just like an accordion where it's like, you know, collapsing into itself over and over again? And every time it collapses, it also then it, like subsequently explodes and there's a new Big Bang.
Right. That's a theory. Yeah. Not everyone believes that that will happen with the universe, but because time doesn't exist, I certainly could believe that that is a possibility, that all the universes are just boom, 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 while also being at the same time. Anyway, this new theory that scientists are investigating has been taken seriously by quantum mechanics scientists. And they, like I said, they're actively not just researching, but debating it because they're fighting for it. They really think that this could be a legitimate thing, and that's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
But rather than, you know, continue talking about the probability of parallel universes for the rest of the episode, I'm gonna get into some stories.
Okay.
So the first one that I'm gonna share was a really popular one. I'm sharing it first because to me it's the least believable.
Okay, got it.
But I'll get into why. So a man who has adopted the pseudonym of James Richards claims he was chasing his dog through Del Puerto Canyon in California on September 9th, 2009, when he tripped in a rabbit hole and knocked himself unconscious. Upon waking, he found himself in a room next to an unrecognizable machine with a man who introduced himself as Jonas. According to the strange man, while on a work-related trip for a dimensional travel agency, he had used the machine to transport the unconscious Richards to a parallel Earth in order to help him. Of course, the logical thing to do in this situation was to start discussing pop culture, which led Jonas and Richards to the topic of the Beatles, a band that both dimensions obviously shared. To Richard's surprise, in this alternate dimension, the Beatles were all alive and still creating music. Richards brought back a souvenir cassette tape entitled Everyday Chemistry that was supposedly was composed of Beatles songs never released in our dimension, which he uploaded to his website.
What?
Interestingly, these titles and songs that are on the cassette are actually derived from samples that each individual member recorded at some point in their lives.
Okay.
Which they absolutely did that. If you remember in the late 90s, the Beatles actually released a brand new song, which was interesting since John Lennon had died
like right.
17 years prior, Free as a Bird. But they did it because he had recorded some samples that they then built onto and created the song. So the idea I could kind of buy into a bit. However, he did upload the songs.
Okay.
So if you listen to the songs and you know the Beatles, you can tell they are literally samples from existing songs.
Oh, that's, yeah, okay.
Well, one of them was from Man on the Run, from Wings. Like, not even the Beatles. But... I don't know. When I found it, I got so excited because I was like, what is this going to sound like? And I'm like, no, no, come on. But movie plug, if you haven't seen the movie Yesterday, it's kind of similar to this, but it was really well done.
I really liked it. Like, there are some people who hated on it. I really liked it.
I did, too.
It had a nice, like, just sentimental, you know, feel about it. You gotta like the Beatles to watch it. But I thought it was so funny because when he slips into that alternate dimension, not only do the Beatles not exist, there's, like, random things that don't exist. Like, when he asks, can I have a Coke? And in that universe, that only refers to cocaine. And they're like, what? And not like the drink Coke.
Right, yeah, yeah,
I thought that was funny.
It's a, I liked it. It was a good movie. I think it was a better take on this, you know, alternate idea of the Beatles. But anyway, that's that one. The next story is about a place called Ong's Hat, and this was kind of interesting. Ong's Hat.
Okay.
So if you were to take the turnpike to exit 4 and follow Route 70 East, you'd come to Route 72 at 4 Mile Circle. Taking a hard left leads to a place known as Ong's Hat. This is in New Jersey.
Okay.
And this is, it's a trail that some say leads to a mysterious portal to another dimension. So the New Jersey Pine Barrens have a plethora of deserted villages, most of them simply abandoned decades, even centuries ago. And Ong's Hat in Burlington County is the most infamous of these. The true reason as to why anyone would name a village Ong's Hat may be shrouded in mystery forever, because that's a strange name.
Yeah.
The folklore surrounding the town's name is well known, though. So legend has it that at one time, a resident of the area was a flashy young gentleman with the name of Ong. While his first name was unknown, Ong is an old-time Pine Barrens name because one of the earliest settlers there was Jacob Ong. So I don't know where he came from, but there we go. He was a fixture at local dances where he was famous for being able to get any lady he wanted with his fancy dance moves and his suave attire. Most notably, though, his silk hat. Now, apparently, Ong was something of what we would now consider a player, and that he would flirt and dance with as many women as he could. One of his love interests caught on to this practice at a dance, and she attacked him. Taking his hat, she stomped on it. Fuck this hat. Ong, who was very drunk and very upset that his hat had just been ruined, ran outdoors and tossed the hat into the air out of frustration. It caught in the high branches of a pine tree and stayed there for years. It became a landmark by which people could find the small village, and the area was dubbed Ong's Hat. I think of all the folklore stories, that is actually a very believable story.
I mean, it sounds cool.
As the Pine Barrens themselves became less and less populated with the dying out of a local industry, Ong's Hat was basically all but forgotten. Today, it is home to no residents. Nobody lives there. Instead, there is piles of rubble, overgrown building foundations, and other reminders of a bygone age. Ong's Hat may have been nothing more than a footnote in the local history books were it not for a very weird development that some believe occurred there in the last quarter of the 20th century, which is the opening of a gateway to another dimension.
Ruh-roh.
The following more recent history of Ong's Hat and its mysterious interdimensional portal can be found in a book entitled Ong's Hat, The Beginning. So the author of the book, Joseph Matheny.
Are you okay?
Just little strokes here and there, no big deal. Promise. They're going to look at my brain someday, I swear. So the author of the book, Joseph Matheny, is fairly coy about whether he intended the book to be fact or fiction. Like, it is not something where he's like, this is a fact book. Like, he's just, it's ambiguous. He's just like, okay. I wrote a book. Read it. He basically said the split between who believes the book is fiction versus nonfiction is pretty even. And that's really all he has to say about that. Some claim that his book is pure fantasy and has set up a hoax that many have basically accepted as real and fact. According to his history, the Moorish Orthodox Church of America. Wait, what did I say? To his book. So the history of the book.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't make that more clear. The Moorish Orthodox Church of America was founded in the 1950s by a group of white jazz musicians and poets who were formerly members of the Newark-founded Moorish Science Temple. The members of this small sect traveled the world, learning different philosophies and spiritual practices from all different masters of the Eastern world. One of these travelers was known as Wally Fard. When Fard returned from his travels abroad in 1978, he spent all of his savings on 200 acres in the New Jersey Pine Barrens. Along with a group of runaway boys from Paramus and two lesbian anarchists, he moved onto the property and formed a newer, even more exclusive sect called the Moorish Science Ashram.
Okay.
I feel like we get a little culty here. So yeah, Fard like, published... he published a series of Xeroxed newsletters proclaiming his beliefs. Those on the fringe who had read his words began flocking to his land. Again, more cultish. Among these refugees were two scientists who were looked down upon for their radical views, Frank and Althea Dobbs. The Dobbs twins were raised in Texas among a UFO-worshipping cult founded by their father. Needless to say, they were used to life on the outskirts of the mainstream. When they arrived in the Pines, they set up a lab inside of a ramshackle trailer, and they began making discoveries that shook the small commune to its core. They had previously been working at Princeton, where they submitted, as their PhD thesis, a series of equations that led to what they called cognitive chaos. They were dismissed from the university and found their way to the Pines, and in the remote locale, they were free to work further on their ideas. Their theories promoted the idea that people could tap into the unused portion of their brains and do things such as stop their aging and purge disease from their systems.
Very Lucy.
Very Lucy. Like, which
yeah.
We use all of our brain just getting that out of the way. We do use all of our brain. There's scans. We can see it. Anyway.
Where do you think this whole thing of like that we only use 2% of our brain thing came from?
I actually used to know the answer to that. And I don't remember anymore. There was like a theory about it that was then disproven.
Interesting.
But I think it's a theory that just came like prior. Stuck around. Yeah. I think it's like 10% is what they claim.
Okay.
But we do use all of our brain. It's just, I think it was before brain scans where we could actually measure what parts of the brain light up during what activities. And I think maybe the idea is like how much of the brain is being used at once. I don't know.
Right. Gotcha.
But then I also think people with trauma often have more areas of the brain lit up, which is why you're on edge because your brain's just on.
Like overstimulated.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That is what it would be to be overstimulated. Anyway. They're still working on the idea that maybe there's part of the brain that can do things that we don't know. I don't know. Chaos studies. They used their research to found the Institute of Chaos Studies. So progress occurred even quicker than the scientists could have predicted. And within 3 years, they stumbled upon an extraordinary and bizarre device that came to be known as the Gates. This was one of a series of devices they referred to as the egg. They hooked people up to computers and charted their brainwaves. By experimenting with sex, drugs, and other mind wave manipulators, the scientists learned how to control the chaos they found within the mind. I really want this to be real. The fourth version of the egg was tested on one of the Paramus runaways. When it was activated, he and the device itself disappeared. Moments later, it rematerialized. The boy claimed that he had traveled to the dimension next door to ours, and this was the opening of the gate. The members of the Institute for Chaos Studies had to leave their Pine Barrens compound due to a chemical spill from Fort Dix that was leaking nuclear material into the area. Instead of fleeing outward to another city, they fled interdimensionally. They used the gate to transport themselves and all of their possessions into an alternate dimension. In this dimension, they still lived in Ong's hat, but humankind did not exist. According to some, the experiments at Ong's hat led to a violent and bloody confrontation. They claim that the government got wind of the experiments being conducted and stormed the compound, killing 7 members of the group. Some say it was Delta Force who did the killing, while others blame operatives of the Russian or Danish militaries. I am not sure what the Danish would be doing there.
Yeah, that sounds random.
Very. Skeptics of this far-fetched tale believe that Joseph Matheny's book Ong's Hat is nothing more than just fiction, bolstered by an elaborate internet hoax. Others claim that he's had to hint at the book being a hoax to preserve his efforts to tell the truth and to protect his own safety. He became involved in the Ong's Hat saga when he posted a book catalog he had found, known as the Incunabula Catalog. I don't know what that word is or means.
Okay.
And he found it on BBS and FTP systems around the internet at the turn of the 90s. So like something super old school that was out there. Okay. He then produced one of the essays reviewed in the catalog. From there, he claimed to have interviewed one of the physicists mentioned in those papers, as well as the original author of the book catalog he had posted. These 4 documents make up what are known as the Incubula Papers, and it is somewhat unclear as to whether there are ever was any documentation of these events other than what's found in his books. No one's dug into it too much.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes. Now that's Ong's Hat, but I'm going to move into a short little story here about Carol. Carol here in 2006 was driving from Paris, California, back home to San Bernardino. She claims she decided to stop in her hometown of Riverside. It didn't take long, however, for Carol to realize she wasn't in the right town, although its geographical location was correct. She claims she couldn't find her childhood home or those of other family members. In fact, she didn't recognize any of the houses, even though all of the numbers were correct. Even the cemetery where her grandparents were buried was just a fenced lot full of overgrown weeds. She began wondering if she was simply in the wrong town and just was having a massive brain fart.
Yeah.
This could be a strong theory that had she not found some of the landmarks that were familiar, such as the college and the middle school, where she's like, okay, yes, nope, know those places. However, her relief in finding something recognizable in those was short-lived, as she soon noticed the eerie vibes surrounding the residents who were walking around.
Mm-hmm.
She soon left, being a little creeped out. She was afraid to approach anybody because the vibe was off. It was not it. She came to believe that she had stumbled upon a parallel dimension in which it was a much darker place.
Huh.
So she booked it. She left and went on to where she intended to go without incident. And she's never come across that alternate dimension again. She's traveled back to Riverside. Everything's been fine, but just that one trip.
Weird.
Yeah. So that was just a short, quick little story. Obviously, none of it can be, you know, looked into.
Right. Like, verified. How?
But, yeah. I think most people who have stories like this, it's something similar to that, where it's something short-lived. A blip. In the Matrix.
Yeah, blips.
Little blips.
A little glitch.
Little blips. Is there a rapper named Little Blips? That'd be cute. Now, this next one is about another woman. This one's Lorena Garcia. And in July of 2008, she was a well-educated 41-year-old woman. She woke up in bed on just what seemed like any other day. However, as she went on with her normal routine, she later claims that she found small details that seemed peculiar. For example, her sheets and pajamas were different from what she remembered wearing to bed. Obviously, like, she brushed this off and was like, whatever, maybe I just am... It's a habit. You get dressed before bed every night. Maybe she's just remembering a different night. Who knows?
Sure. Yeah, it happens. Yeah.
She got ready for work. She went to where she had been employed for 20 years. However, upon arriving at her department, she realized it wasn't actually her department, despite it being in its usual location on its usual floor. Having decided that something weird was definitely going on, she returned home, only to find the man from whom she says she had separated 6 months before was acting like the separation had never taken place.
What?
Her new lover, whom she claimed she had been seeing for 4 months, was nowhere to be found. Even after hiring a private detective, his whereabouts remained unknown. Like,
what? This, like, he didn't even exist?
This isn't a blip. This is something much longer. Yes. There was no trace of him at his alleged residence, nor any trace of his family.
The fuck?
So while it seems like her perceptions could be the result of, like, a neurological malfunction, maybe, if something happened, she believes that she woke up in a parallel universe.
Whoa.
And unfortunately, she has not been able to return to her normal universe. Leaving her in a dimension where she has a boyfriend that she didn't want to be with, doesn't understand why she's with him.
Yeah.
I couldn't get more details as to what she found out work-wise. I couldn't get that follow-up. But according to her, she just woke up and things were different and they're not going back.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that reminds me of there was, like, so I listened to And That's Why We Drink. It's like one of my favorite, like, top three favorite podcasts, possibly number one, honestly. Mm-hmm. And they have their own, like, version of, like, listener stories or, like, listener stories. I think it's just called listener stories like ours. But anyways, they had someone write in with their own like glitch in the matrix experience.
Mm-hmm.
And he like described his whole life up into, I think like undergrad, and he was like living with his like high school sweetheart, and he was like in this coding program, and he was about to be like recruited to a fancy coding like position, and this guy's super super smart, blah blah blah. It was kind of like a crossover too though, with the Black Eyed Children.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's living with his high school sweetheart, and he hears a knock at the door, and he knows that she shouldn't answer it. Like, he just has this instinct, and he yells, telling her, like, don't answer the door, and she answers the door, and he, like, follows up behind her, and it's, like, a black-eyed kid. And then just, like, that, from that moment, he, like, almost, like, time-traveled, where he was back to high school, but things were different.
Mm.
Where, like, his high school sweetheart, who was, like, known to be, like, super bubbly and just super happy, was suddenly super depressed. He remembered everything of his past life, and he was, like, a master coder at just, like, 15
mm-hmm.
or 16 or whatever. And he's, like, I'm just starting everything over again, but things are just slightly off or different. Like, it was, like, almost like they were hit a reset button.
Mm-hmm.
It was a really interesting story.
That is.
It was very well written. It was one of a longer one that someone has written in, but it was mm-hmm. wild. Like, yeah. If it's true, it's wild.
Yeah. And there are some pretty wild stories out there. I mean, there's stories of people, I mean, as I'm going through them, some where it's a blip where they come and go, mm-hmm. and some where, like the one they're I just stuck. Shared, they're stuck. And I've often wondered, I've actually had that thought of, like, what would happen if all of a sudden I was back to being a teenager, knowing everything up till the point I'm at right now, what would that be like?
Yeah, to be literally beyond your physical years.
Right. Well, and then to have to, like, go through life again and be like, again. Oh, how do I make all the same choices to keep the things that I know I liked? Or can I make better choices and still end up, like, living in the house that I'm in with the animals that I have, with the husband that I have?
Mm-hmm.
It's, I think about it too much, and it's a mind fuck, and I don't like it, but it happens. Yeah.
Oh, man. I have thoughts like that all the time. Not so much with interdimensionality, but more about, like, afterlife stuff, which is basically kind of interdimensionality. It's sometimes I just have to, like, force myself not to think about it, because I go into this, like, rabbit hole in my head, and it's so overwhelming.
Yeah. It's a lot. Sometimes I like to do it just for, like, a mental exercise. And then I go back to solitaire.
Yeah.
Because that makes sense.
For me, it's, like, blackhead videos. I love blackhead videos.
Yeah. Something clean. Something. There's a problem. You take care of it. It's done. It's done. It's clean.
It's so satisfying.
Good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not anything, like, icky. Like, sorry if you have a very sensitive stomach, listener, but, like, I don't like the videos where it's, like, you know, a huge cyst. Or I can watch it. I can stomach it, but I don't enjoy it. What I enjoy are, like, just blackheads. Nothing too, like, pus-like, just
I like blackheads. Them all. My more recent thing is earwax removal videos.
Oh, I've seen those.
I like,
yeah,
like,
those don't come up as often for me. I'm still pretty loyal to my blackheads, but I can watch those too, and it can be satisfying.
Yeah.
Don't judge us.
I don't care if you do. You can judge me. I like all the videos. Big old cysts. I will judge a cyst video where, like, it's just a mess. And you're not doing
it. Oh, yeah, job. Like, the person, whoever's doing, like, the extraction is not doing it well. Like, you can tell it's just someone that dirty they asked hand. To do it.
Oh, God.
Yeah. When I see people not wearing gloves, I, like, cannot watch it.
Or it's shaky. Like, don't get up close and then be shaky. Just don't do the video. It's okay. We'll be fine.
Or the ones that, like, titillate us and they, like, keep almost pressing it, but, like, it's like they don't know how to approach it and they spend literally 5 minutes just, like, trying to figure out how to approach it. And you're like, it's not that hard. Just squeeze it.
Yeah, I've found that I've dedicated myself purely to dermatologist videos now just for that. That's smart. I need to know that it's going to happen. Kind of like,
we know there are people out there listening right now who feel us, who get it, who understand it.
Exactly. I feel like there's a difference between like well-made porn versus someone's uploaded homemade porn. Like, you're exactly. not going to necessarily watch the homemade upload because you don't know what you're going to get. Yeah. The shots may not yeah. be good. Who yeah. knows how it ends, but
exactly.
Good quality, you know what's going to happen. So yeah. Do you want to hear more stories?
So that's it. That's your paranormal story. Have we wrapped
no,
it up?
No, I've got a couple more.
Oh, perfect. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I didn't know if you were like serious or not, but yes. Do it.
No, I put a bunch and I was like, we'll see time-wise what I have here. Okay. This next one, I kind of liked this one. It was interesting. In May 1972, four girls were allegedly driving back to Southern Utah University after spending their Saturday at a rodeo. While crossing I have mixed feelings about rodeos. Anyway, while crossing the state line at about 10 p.m., they came to like a fork in the highway where they veered to the left and began driving through, I'm so sorry if I mispronounce it, Gadianton Canyon.
Okay.
Gadianton. I don't know. Suddenly, the black pavement turned to white cement. Believing they had simply taken a wrong turn, the girls headed back the way they came, but to their surprise, they were suddenly driving past grain fields and ponderosa pines with no desert in sight.
What? Okay.
They decided to stop at a roadside tavern to ask for directions, but quickly changed their minds after one of the girls began screaming hysterically.
What?
Yeah. Four egg-shaped vehicles mounted on tricycle wheels with bright lights shining from the top of them began speeding after them.
What the fuck? Wait, describe these vehicles again? That was a lot.
There's four egg-shaped vehicles on like tricycle wheels. So like a three-wheeled
vehicle. Egg.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they were terrified. They sped back through the canyon as the white cement changed back to its normal black asphalt, leading them back to the familiar desert. Unfortunately, after wrecking in a creek, leaving them with three flat tires, they waited until morning to hike to Highway 56, where they flagged down a state trooper who they then shared their whole story because they were just like, what the fuck?
Right.
He was obviously skeptical, and as outlandish as their story seemed, the tire tracks they left are difficult to explain.
Okay.
8 kilometers or 2 miles north of the highway with no physical evidence of their travels.
What?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, say that one more time. Okay.
So it's a mystery of how the girls ended up over 2 miles north of the highway with no physical evidence of getting there. Like the tires.
Wild.
They're there and then they stop and then all of a sudden they're. Yeah. Yeah.
What?
The car was also missing a hubcap that was never located.
Okay.
Which in a desert, where's that going to go? You know?
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Now this next one. It's a much more famous one. And this is more of a blurb. I'm sure there are more stories. It probably could be a bigger topic, but I'm keeping it short for this just in case. But I feel like a lot of people know about it. The Montauk Project.
Oh, I've heard of this.
This is like part of it. So based out of an abandoned Air Force radar station at the eastern end of Long Island, the Montauk Project was a series of top secret United States government experiments following the Philadelphia experiment, whose purpose was to create the technology to render ships invisible to radar detection.
Mm-hmm.
The 1943 project was almost too much of a success, as the USS Eldridge supposedly went literally invisible before being teleported into another dimension, eventually reappearing off the coast of Norfolk, Virginia. Or so the story goes.
Okay.
Because many of the crew died when the project went wrong, and those who didn't were driven to the brink of insanity, official funding for the Philadelphia experiment was pulled.
Wait, what the fuck?
Yeah. There's stories of when the ship came back, the people that were in it were, like, in different places. Some of them melded into portions of the ship.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, I remember being a kid hearing about, I don't know why I heard about this, but I did, and it really fascinated me.
Whoa.
And that's why some of them were driven to the brink of insanity, because of whatever they encountered.
Yeah.
So, funding was pulled. However, scientists and military officials were fascinated with the experiment's results and wanted to continue exploring the possibilities of teleportation and interdimensional travel. So the Montauk Project was launched in the 1960s. Headed by Dr. John von Neumann, the project focused on examining the psychological changes of those who traveled through dimensions and determining why the Philadelphia experiment was a disaster despite its achievements in teleportation. According to their theories, humans are born with a time reference point that is linked to the electromagnetic fields unique to this Earth and dimension. This is why such a dramatic jump to another dimensional plane was detrimental to so many of the crew, causing insanity and death.
Whoa.
Also why if you were to literally just go back in time, you could be in like 1692, but off in space somewhere, because Earth moves, space moves, everything kind of moves and shifts. Mm-hmm. So like this point on the planet 300 years ago would not be the same point.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So they're saying that humans have this kind of like pinpoint that they have to zero in on to make sure that if you do travel to somewhere or through time or whatever, that you're not going to come back fucked up and like
right
in a ship, like the wall of a ship.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
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 That'd suck. That would suck.
Yes. So during the Montauk Project experiments, von Neumann solved this problem by creating a computer simulated Earth and altering the body's time reference points. According to documents on the Montauk Project, von Neumann succeeded at sending people to other dimensions without consequence. However, upon the experiment's completion in 1967, a report was sent to Congress on their findings about mind control and interdimensional travel. Congress halted funding and terminated the project, fearing of mass mind control. Now, do I believe this story? I don't know, but I really want to. I really want to. You know why I want to? Because of all the stories that came out with like the classified CIA reports and MK Ultra. They were really looking into some serious shit, and MK Ultra and the such are definitely things that I will probably want to talk about on future episodes, depending.
Cool.
Because it's fucked up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now let's see. We have time for one more, right? Story.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do it.
Let's see. Which one do I want to do? This one I'll do just because there's like a picture of the real people. Which I always like that. So after, so basically there was this magazine called Fate Magazine where people could write in stories. And someone wrote in this article in April of 1959. They basically told of the weird experience of Francis E. Peterson of Keokuk, Iowa. who in 1935 was traveling home with her husband and four children from a weekend trip to Missouri. On the way, they noticed what looked like a quaint scenic detour in the area of St. Patrick, and they whimsically took it.
Oh.
They just wanted an adventure. They drove along the rustic, quiet scenery until they reached the rim of an expansive valley. In addition to the picturesque scenery, was the rather odd sight of several women in old-fashioned sunbonnets and long skirts and aprons, and they were pulling water from a well in a, like, really basic wooden buckets and carrying them off on wooden poles balanced on their shoulders.
Wow.
And there were men as well, who all had beards and wore similarly old-fashioned clothes, such as smocks and large black hats. And they were tending flocks of sheep and goats, and some were collecting firewood. Enamored by the quaint, charming scene, they later asked locals what the settlement was, yet were told that no place existed. Convinced that it did indeed exist, Peterson and her husband returned to the area several times afterwards, but could not find any sign of the valley or its inhabitants. So there's this idea, I think, that you would assume, oh, maybe they came across like an Amish village.
Except, that's what I was at first thinking.
Except if you went back, they would still be there.
Right. Yeah. Like, where'd they go?
They were not. They were not. And then I'm actually going to share one more because that was really short. And another strange story. This one's from 1962. A Mr. R.W. Balcom and his wife were driving to Lake Tahoe from their home in Live Oak. The couple stopped at a quaint restaurant nestled away off of Highway 50, a few miles from Placerville. They had never noticed the restaurant there before in all their years of traveling along the same route, even though it seemed like it was weathered and rustic. It looked like it should have been there for years. But they decided to stop for a bite to eat. The food was described as being surprisingly good, and the service was friendly, and they would have visited again, basically. Like, it was a nice place. On their return trip from Lake Tahoe, they attempted to seek out the charming little restaurant to eat again, but when they arrived at the location, it was gone. But, like, it had never been there. Like, no building.
Weird.
No foundation structure, nothing like that. They supposedly spent three more weekends traveling through the area in an effort to find the restaurant that they were convinced was there and never found it again.
The fuck?
Yeah. And I was gonna share a story based off of real people, and I forgot that there were two stories before it, and I didn't put breaks in my notes like I normally should. I kept thinking I was getting to that story, which I'll share real quick. I can only keep saying that, but let's just do it. I'll do it. So an intriguing case of a mysterious doorway to another dimension, and perhaps even through time itself, occurred in 1956, similar to Ong's hat, but different. A treasure hunter, by the name of Ron Quinn, ventured with his brother Chuck and some friends into the remote and rugged mountains of southeastern Arizona. They were looking for the mysterious lost Spanish treasure and gold mines.
Cool.
3 weeks into their adventure, the hunters set up camp one night, and that evening they were surprised to see two large balls of bluish green light floating about in the dark and starry sky. The bewildered campers determined that these were not flares of any kind, nor aircraft, and the balls of light hovered for about several minutes before vanishing behind some mountain peaks. The next evening, the same thing happened again. When they mentioned the strange lights to a local cowboy named Louis Romero, he informed them that the lights were a reoccurring phenomenon in the area and had been seen as far back as 1939.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. Their group would spot the strange lights several more times over the course of their excursion. And at one point during their travel, the group passed by what looked like a stone archway, which stood out as something of an anomaly upon the landscape, looking out of place, basically. But they didn't think much of it until later when they spoke to a local named John, who claimed that the archway had long been surrounded by strange stories and rumors that anyone who entered the doorway never came out, and that objects thrown in would not emerge from the other side, earning the structure the name Doorway of the Gods.
Whoa.
There were also stories of the archway shimmering and of strange figures lurking around it dressed in old-fashioned clothing that did not seem to be ghosts. As they disturbed the gravel where they stepped and cast shadows, yet they would suddenly vanish.
Weird. Ooh, that gave me chills.
There were also tales of camps near the archway that had been mysteriously abandoned and of prospectors who had never returned from the area. John relayed his own tale of strangeness concerning the archway, claiming that one dark and stormy day he had visited it and peered through it to see that although the scenery was the same, the sky was oddly clear and blue on the other side. When he looked around the edge of the doorway, the clouds were once again dark and thick, hanging menacingly over the scene. And the bizarre sight with its contrasting views frightened him. Enthralled with these stories, Quinn and his group went back to the terrain to find this archway and investigate it. They managed to locate it again, and upon closer inspection, it proved to be surrounded with an unusually large deposit of geodes, some of which were broken open with their, interiors glittering in the sun. Mm-hmm. And the archway itself, it measured to be about 7 feet high and 5 feet wide, with columns that were like 15-inch diameters on either side.
Okay.
And it stood beside a steep, rocky slope. After checking it out, the team went to work basically testing out all the weird stories. They threw various rocks through the opening, but the rocks fell to the ground on the other side. There was no sign of anything remotely mysterious whatsoever. This literally, it was just like an arch. No weird. Big deal. And increasingly skeptical, some of the members of the team boldly put their arms through without incident, although no one was willing to try stepping all the way through. After about an hour of this, they departed with no real answer or anything like that. However, a weird series of events would unfold in the coming days that would make them think that something strange was going on. One day, as they were checking out the portal yet again and collect some of the geodes, Roy and another member of the team, Walt, noticed that the stone portal seemed to be shimmering as if in intense heat, even though it was a cold January day. The odd shimmering allegedly lasted a few minutes, during which time both men claimed they could basically feel a building pressure within their ears before the shimmering and the weird physical sensation slowly went away. The event spooked both of them, especially Roy, who vowed never to go anywhere near the archway again. On another occasion, the group came across another group of three treasure hunters who claimed that they had also camped out near the so-called portal. The group claimed that the evening their camp had been hit by what sounded like rain hitting their tents, even though it was a clear night. They looked out their tents, and they were met with the sight of small reddish-brown pebbles around the size of like a pea falling in great numbers from above.
What?
The pebbles were found to be warm to the touch, and there was no explanation for where they came from. And they seemed to be made of some kind of iron ore.
Oh, okay.
All of these escalating odd occurrences would point to something definitely strange going on around the archway, at least. But the most bizarre incident would happen years after the expedition was over. 4 years after their treasure hunt, on October 14th, 1973, Chuck Quinn was compelled to make a personal trip to the side of the stone portal that had basically eluded their understanding. He arrived at the canyon that led up to the slopes that would lead up to the site. Chuck went about climbing up the steep rocky slopes towards the archway, stopping for a breather about halfway up. And it was there that he looked out west over the majestic scenery all around him that he noticed there was a canyon that should not have been there. Baffled, he made his way back down the slope to enter from the east, and it was here that he realized that, in fact, he was in the same canyon he had been in before, only he had somehow been transported 250 yards down the canyon he had hiked along into another slope that was facing south rather than west.
So he, like, teleported.
Yeah. The strange event convinced him that, indeed, there was something strange going on, and he booked it.
Yeah, same. I mean, me, like, a long time ago, but same.
So, yes, those are my stories. There are so many more, but I will talk myself hoarse with the amount that I have. It's wild to me to see how many stories exist. Some that are super detailed, some that are not, some that are like, I don't really know because it was so mundane.
Mm-hmm.
People having everyday experiences where they have a conversation with someone who seems to know them and know things about them, but they've never met the person before.
Yeah, like I've heard stories like that, like the mundane ones where like a person's driving and they drive through a forest when they come out the other end. Like they talk to their mom and they're like, oh, yeah, and your third grade teacher, I just ran into her. And you're like, no, she's dead.
Yep.
And it's like, she's like, no, what are you talking about? But you have all the memories of like how she died, this and that, going to the funeral, all the things. And it's just like, yep, it never happened.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I like thinking about this. I like thinking about it a lot. I do believe in maybe not particular details of stories, but I do buy into interdimensional travel. I definitely think there's something to it.
I absolutely do too, and my belief is that we all eventually interdimensionally travel at the end of this life is what I think. What world that is the big question mark.
Mm-hmm.
But wow, good job, Laura. That was good coverage.
Thank you. Not particularly spooky, unless you like really put your mind to it.
Yeah, no, it's spooky. It's paranormal. Like, even though it's scientific, like, honestly, everything that we talk about that is paranormal has a scientific explanation behind it. We just don't know it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So even though this one has a lot more science backed to it, doesn't, like, I mean, it's just, it's fucking creepy.
I think
it's fucking
makes
spooky,
it
man.
Creepier.
Yeah.
It makes it more real.
Exactly. Oh, well, this was our last episode of 2021. We will be taking a break. We'll be back on January 12th of 2022. How did that happen?
Yeah.
We thank you so much for another amazing year of doing this podcast and you all listening. All the support has just kind of exploded this last year for the podcast. It's been amazing.
Yeah.
And we are just so appreciative of each and every one of you that has taken part in this journey with us and listening to us, whether you're a Patreon member or not, just, you know, just you listening is a huge support. And it's been a great year for the New Witches.
It really has.
And we got to have, like, amazing interviews with different people, including authors. Like, what?
I know. What happened?
And ones that we didn't even have to reach out to. Like, they came to us. Like, they wanted to be on our show. We're like, wait, what?
So weird.
It's been
so,
so
cool.
Great. And we are working on an even better year ahead for you next year.
Yes.
So, again, I'm Maria.
I'm Laura.
And for the last time in 2021, you've been listening to The New Witches. Find us on the social medias. We are at The New Witches pretty much everywhere. You can also check out our website, thenewwitches.com, if you'd like to submit a listener story. Oh my gosh, if anyone has any like blips or glitch in the Matrix kind of stories like this, write in. Or if you know of somebody, like write in. Like I wanna hear stories like this. I know there's people out there that have their own stories like this. So a few ways to submit. As I mentioned, our contact page on our website. We have a submission form there. You can also email your story in directly to us at thenewwitches@gmail.com. And lastly, you can also call it in. We have a Google Voice mailbox. The phone number for that is 707-559-8111. And it goes straight to voicemail. You have up to 3 minutes. It does cut you off at 3 minutes to leave your message, whether that's a story or a question. Our listener stories are more than just for stories. We also read out and answer questions on those episodes. Yep. That's every 13th of the month. And what else? Just please continue to support the podcast, whether that be, you know, clicking subscribe, listening in every week, telling your friends and family about us. Some of the best ways to support us, too, is rating and reviewing us on whatever listening platform you are using, but especially on Apple Podcasts. That's a huge help. Mm-hmm. And also supporting us on Patreon. So we've mentioned Patreon quite a few times in this episode, but go to patreon.com/thenewwitches. And for as little as $5 a month, we give you exclusive benefits as a patron of the podcast. I mentioned, you know, being added to our like private social media groups. You're also given access to monthly bonus episodes. Certain levels include free readings with Laura. And to everyone, next week I will be rolling out the Witch's Compass document where you can journal, reflect on the year that has just passed, and look forward to the year ahead. So if you like journaling, you want to be like contemplative and you want it to be through the lens of your spirituality, you can access that on patreon.com/thenewwitches. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We'll see you in 2022. Stay witchy.
Keep it creepy.
Bye.
Bye.